Okay, we're continuing going back, but then going forward on the situation of Kerem Navot. Kerem Navot means the vineyard of this guy Navot HaYisraeli, talking about buying properties next door, right? He is the next door neighbor to Ahav. Ahav, just to quickly summarize, Ahav wanted to buy this property. Why? He wanted to build a gan. Interesting. Where did I see this just recently? That someone was writing that whenever you see a gan in the Torah, it's problems. Oh, it was in the Times, actually. It was obviously going back to Gan Eden and whatever. It's not necessarily a good thing. In any event, here is another example of where a gan causes problems. I didn't have a chance to look and see what they were talking about and whatever, but here the gan that he wants is basically to probably to show off his kingship to visitors and guests. That's probably what they would use a garden for. And of course, like you said, when it's an adjacent property, so it's extremely valuable. You can't replace adjacency. So he offers to buy it, and it seems like when he offers to buy it, it seems like he doesn't do anything wrong in terms of the way that he wants to buy it. But the Navot will not sell it to him for any price, not because of the value, the money of it, but because it belongs to his father. Right, because it's the Nahalat Avotai is the way that he describes it, and he will not give that up. Now, Ahav, if you remember when we looked back at this, so he didn't really get that. He only saw it as a money issue, and especially the way that it tells us that he related it to his wife when he goes home. What happens? The guy won't sell it. The guy will not sell it. He refuses to sell it. He goes home and he gets in bed and he's depressed, right, which is not very king-like, but nevertheless, that's what he does. His wife says, "What's the story?" He tells her what the story is. She says, "I'm going to show you. Now you'll be a king." And what does she do? She goes, she sets up a fake trial. She sets up false witnesses. And they basically say that this Navot guy, blasphemed the king. He went against the king, and they had this guy killed. Now it's interesting, and we pointed this out last time, if she was going to kill him, so just kill him. But apparently there are, yeah, even in the Wild West, there's ways, you can't just do anything. So that's what she does. And he happily goes down. She comes home one after that and she says, "Listen, it's yours. Go take the field." And he goes down to take the field. Right, so that's all that we saw last time. Okay, so there's almost like in some levels there's nothing new, right? Meaning Ahav we knew was a bad guy from beforehand, but we didn't know, although we had talked about it, is his weakness, right? We didn't know that he would go home and go cry, right? We didn't expect that. And we didn't realize, we knew Isabel was bad, but we didn't realize the depths of how bad she was bad. Right? Here we're seeing she is the one that makes it happen. She's the pants in the family, if you will, or the one who controls things. Okay. So what happens? Turn to page 769. And this is right on the heels of Navot going into the Kerem, going into the vineyard to take possession of it. So it says like this: "Vayhi devar Adonai el Eliyahu hatishbi lemor." Hashem speaks to Eliyahu and he says, "Kum red likrat Achav melech Yisrael asher b'Shomron hineh b'Kerem Navot asher yarad sham l'rishton." Now remember, this is after we thought Hashem was kind of firing Eliyahu, but he is not, obviously, because here he tells him, "Get up, go to Ahav, go out and greet him. He's in the vineyard of Navot," that he went there to take possession of it. "V'dibarta elav lemor," say to him as follows, "Ko amar Adonai, haratzachta v'gam yarashta," have you murdered and also taken possession? "V'dibarta elav lemor," and say to him the following thing, כה אמר אדוני במקום אשר לקקו הכלבים את דם נבות, ילוקו הכלבים את דמך גם אתה. In the place where the dogs licked up the blood of Navot, there they will lick your blood also. Right? Meaning, Navot was killed in a public way, in a gruesome way. The blood was lapped up by the dogs. So your blood will also be lapped up by the dogs in the very same place.
Eliyahu had a relationship with Achab, so it's easy for him to go and talk to him. Versus the new guy doesn't have the relationship.
Could be, although we're going to see that this is not the last time that we have Eliyahu. So in other words, the firing or the perceived firing was not a firing, and that's why we explained things the way that we did. Now, so Hashem is telling him. So by the way, also a little conspicuous here is kind of the way that Hashem says this. Go to Achav Melech Yisrael Asher B'Shomron. As if...
he doesn't know where he is.
Right. Or who he is.
Right.
Right. Why does he have to say, go to the king of Israel that's in Shomron? Okay. Why to tell him where he is? That is important to say. Okay. And then, what does Eliyahu do? Does he do what he tells him or not? Vayomer Achav El Eliyahu. Hamitzatani Oyevi Vayomer Matzati. He says, so Eliyahu goes down, right? And before he even gets to say anything, we think, right? Eliyahu says, Achav says to him, did you find me my enemy? Right? In other words, Achav comes out with a very not so happy,
attitude
to it. So he says like this, Vayomer Matzati, he says, I found you. Yan hitmakercha lasot hara b'nei Adonai. Since you sold yourself to do that which is evil in God, hineni mevi elecha ra'ah. I'm bringing bad upon you. Ubi'arti acharecha, and I'm going to burn after you. V'chrati l'achav mashtin bakir v'atzur v'azuv b'Yisrael. And I will make sure that, and if you read the English, you see how it works, right? I will make a clean sweep of you. I will cut off from Israel every male belonging to Achav, bond and free, right? So actually, it means there won't be a mashtin bakir, means someone that urinates on the wall, right? Meaning there won't be even nothing left, a total wipeout of your people. There's going to be nobody left from your family. Pasuk 22. And I'm going to make your house like the house of these two other kings of Israel, Yerobam ben Nevat and Baasha ben Achiah, who were both wiped out. They didn't last. Elakas asher hichastav tachtiat Israel, for the anger that you caused and that you caused Israel to sin. And also to Izebel Hashem spoke. And what did he say? Haklavim yochlu et Izebel b'chel Yisrael. The dogs will eat Izebel in the chel Yisrael. It's not clear what that means. They translate it here as a field. Okay, whatever it is.
But God doesn't say anything about Izebel on top.
Hold on.
We don't think so.
Hamet l'achav ba'ir yochlu haklavim. The ones that died to Achav, meaning his family, in the city, the dogs will eat. And those that die in the field, the birds, the vultures will eat. Now, there's an interesting thing. It says, there's this parenthetical statement, 25, 27. If you look, 25 and 26, if you look, they even put parentheses in the way that they translated here, which is basically saying he was the worst guy ever, which there's an obvious question, which is, why are you telling me this now? Right, you could have said it in the beginning, or you could say it at the very end. But here, it's kind of like just injecting it. So we need to come back to. We need to understand what happened here. Right, Hashem spoke to Eliyahu. It seems like all he told him was one statement. Right, and then we got a whole different story. Right, so what do we make of that? Right, so I think that the way that we would just, that. I think the right way to explain it is like this. There are other ways to explain it, but I think the right way to explain it is like this. Hashem told Eliyahu to say all of this. But the way that it's reported to us is not that way. In order for it to be a little bit more brief and also to make a different point, which we're going to get to. Okay, so first of all, what does Hashem say to Eliyahu? Hashem wants Eliyahu to go and talk to Achav, and he wants to tell him some bad stuff's coming your way. Right now, what is the bad stuff that's coming his way?
He's going to die, his wife's going to die, his kids are going to die.
So that's a lot of different things. One, he's going to die, and not just is he's going to die, because I hate to tell you, I'm going to tell you, you're going to die, I'm going to die, he's going to die. Right? That's not what he tells him. You're going to die a gruesome death. Right? Why a gruesome death? Right? And where? In a place that's a fitting place. Right? Why? Because how do I know it's going to be gruesome? Because dogs lapping up the blood, no one wants to hear that about themselves. Right? That means it's going to be not a good death. Right? So that's one thing. Now, they say the same thing about Izebel. Izebel is also going to get that. Then there's another thing, which is anyone in the family is going to die. And how are they going to die? Also, vultures, dogs, right? Not the type of death, you know, not you're going to die in your bed and be peacefully buried, right? That's another thing. Is there anything else that he said to him?
Hashem said to Eliyahu.
Is there any other punishment that he has?
I mean, he's losing his kingship.
Yes, right. That's also going to happen, right? In other words, yeah, they're all going to be gruesome deaths, but what he says is also, and your kingship is going to go the way of the other kingships.
That's not what Hashem told him.
So I believe, I'm not 100% sure, but I think that even though we know Eliyahu has a propensity to be a rogue agent and do whatever it is that he thinks is the right thing to do, I think here he's doing what Hashem told him to do. Meaning he was right. And truth be told, even if Hashem didn't tell him this,
he was right.
He is right. And meaning Achav deserves this.
I mean, if you look at what Hashem said, right, it seems as though, okay, he's going to die, Ahav is going to die, and the dogs are going to lick up his blood, but he still has an heir. I feel like if Hashem was really getting rid of this guy, that he would go to at lengths to say, you know, I'm going to make sure that there's no heir possible.
Right. Okay. Hold off. Now, let's see what the response is that he has. You may remember. Pasuk 27. Vayi kishmoa Achav et hadibarim ha'ele, vayikra begadav. When he hears these things, he tears his clothing. Vayasem sak al besaro vayatzom. And he puts sackcloth on and he fasts. Vayishkav basak vayhalech at. And he sleeps in the sackcloth and he walks very slowly, which those are signs of
mourning,
which teshuvah, right? You know, maybe not complete teshuvah, but it seems like decent teshuvah. Vayhi devar adonai Eliyahu atishbi. So Hashem turns to Eliyahu and he says, "Haraita, have you seen? Ki nechna Achav melefanai. Achav subjugated before me. Yan ki nechna mepanai. Because he subjugated before me." Lo avi hara'a bi'amav, I will not bring that which is bad in his days. Bime beno avi hara'a al beto, in the days of his son, I will bring the bad upon his house. Right, so Hashem is moved a little bit by this. Right, Hashem seems to be, he's going to do things differently than he would have otherwise. Right, so some of the things that Achav does seems to have some effect.
Okay.
Right, so I go back now.
But
right.
Now, do we know about his sons? Or his sons were just...
We're going to find out about his sons. So far, we don't know anything about
exactly,
his sons.
That's what I'm saying. So over right. Here, Hashem says, I'm going to do bad upon his sons.
Yes.
So obviously his sons are not the cream of the crop either.
Or maybe, listen, if you do bad, I'm going to take it out on your kids. Which we don't always like to hear. Well...
Don't we say a son is not a son is not a...
I mean, it's yeah. We also say other things, but yeah. Now look, to say that that children don't ever suffer for the parents, it's not true, right? So first of all, not only is it not true in the Tanakh, it's not true, right? In other words, if a father commits a sin, you think the kids don't suffer, right? They suffer enormously, right? They
from Hashem, or you're saying like
it's the way of the world. Forget Hashem.
Right, so that's what I'm saying.
Right, in other words, Bernie Madoff, right? Did his kids pay a price?
Yes, of course.
They pay a little price. Will anyone ever do business with them ever again? Can they keep that name?
That I can understand.
What's that? Right. It's gone, right?
That's more.
Why could you understand it?
That's much more understandable than Hashem punishing his son over his father.
It's not necessarily punishment. It's basically if a son sees a father do something, the likelihood of him doing it is.
That's very, already right, another that story. Person, that's he did it. Person. That's you're already answering it right. on his side. Right. I'm saying no. Sometimes the son suffers for what the father does. How about Makat Bechorot? Right? Did every Egyptian firstborn enslave them? Right? It doesn't seem like it. Right? And certainly, Paro is the one that's the problem. Right?
But that's not why they did it, though. That's not why all of them were.
I'm showing you there's people that
say that's a bigger punishment to Akav that his son, that he's going to know that his son is going to suffer.
We'll come back to that, but my point is the idea that children never suffer for their parents, not so simple.
Yeah.
Not, I mean, we like to see everybody gets judged for what they have, but the fact is, it's not true. We all carry things that we all pay for what our parents did, positively and negatively. Right, whatever our parents did, we inherit that on some level. Yeah, you know, look, if let's say it this way, right? Let's say the son did nothing, right? The son is 10 years old, right? But the father deserves to die, right? In this instance, you know, I'm talking about in the king. So is the son going to be punished? So let's say the son doesn't get killed. The son is punished. He's not, his father's going to die. And he's not going to be the king, right? Because, right? So whether or not he gets killed or not, did the son get punished? He did.
Well, he has a rightful claim to the throne.
But he would get punished. It would be, why does he have a rightful claim to the throne? He lost it when his father acted. What gives you the rightful claim? Who has a rightful claim? I mean, again, all these things, it's not... The rightful claim means he's rewarded for what his father did, right? We get.
His father took it, and it wasn't an heir to the throne either.
Well, his father got it from his father, right. but yes. But my point is, there was a movie a number of years ago. I think it was called City by the Sea. It was a good. It's worth seeing because it was filmed in Asbury Park, so you see all the things. It's De Niro and James Franco, and. The basic premise of the story, the story is like this. It's De Niro's a cop whose father was a murderer who was given the electric chair. And his whole life he's trying to not be that guy's son, but he's that guy's son and he's a cop. But they always were suspicious of him. And the son is a druggie because... Of all the and the part of the message of the movie is you never stop paying for who your parents are, mm-hmm. right? And that there's always it's true. We do. We have, you know, we deal with our parents and our parent and our kids deal with us, and our kids have to deal with the things that you know we have to. Is it fair that my kid walks into shul and people the rabbi, oh, he spoke too long, oh, he's whatever. I mean, sometimes they're nice. Sometimes they'll say nice things. But sometimes it's not easy, right? And everybody has, that's my thing, but everybody has something, right? You know, so is that fair? It is. Right? Yeah, it's the way it goes. So here, Achav's kids are going to suffer because of what Achav did and what Izevil did also, obviously. Going back to how this all played out. It seems like Hashem told Eliyahu, listen, I had enough of Achav. And he's done. Now, what's interesting is, where is it that Eliyahu starts talking to Achav? Right, it's like a little bit of a weird way that this all comes about. Right, we have the sin, which we talked about the last time that we spoke. Then we have, right after it says the sin, Hashem tells Eliyahu, go talk to him. And what does he tell him? He tells him, tell him the dogs are going to lick your blood up. Now, that we agree that that's not all he told him. Right? Because it wouldn't make sense for that to be all that he told him, especially if there's going to be more that's going to happen, be happening. And also, he's going to say the things that he's going to say. So we see there's other things that...
God knows his evil was behind it, the whole thing.
Yeah, right. Also true. So what's interesting is, but we don't find out that he says that to him until he gets there. And there's this statement in between, which says, Achav says to Eliyahu, did you find me? And he says, I found you, right? Which, did you find me? Does that sound like a guy that is...
did you find my enemy, like he says?
Did you find me my enemy?
Did you find me my enemy?
Right. So is he saying to him, I accept what you're saying? Or is
sounds
he
like
saying...
like you caught me red-handed. You know, like he knew he was... I feel like he was expecting it.
I'm thinking the opposite. I'm thinking he's a little defiant.
Because the English is a common thing. It's like, so you have found me, my enemy.
But with a question mark.
Right.
With a question mark. It's a tough statement, but what I'm thinking happened here is that Eliyahu started to say certain thing, meaning Hashem told him what to say. Eliyahu comes in and he starts by saying, listen, the dogs are going to lick your blood up, buddy. So the guy says to him, what do you think, you got me? Meaning, he's not moved. He doesn't care. When Eliyahu says to Achav, the dogs are going to lick your blood, it doesn't mean anything to Achav. But then when he says to him, but that's not going to be all, right? It's going to be much worse. You're going to be gone. When I say you're going to be gone, everyone's going to die. By the way, what does this king know? This king knows kings die, right? But what did he hope for? He's hoping that he's going to continue on, right? Meaning
his children,
my household, right? And one of the things that we saw was that they built the city of Shomron. Remember, we said he was the king of Shomron. We built the city of Shomron to be, that's going to solidify them. He married Izebel, why? So they could solidify them. They were all about... and not being like Yerovam ben Nevat, not like being Baasha ben Achiah. They wanted to change it. By the way, this is happening at a time where there's two kingdoms. There's the southern kingdom and the northern kingdom. The southern kingdom has three kings. The northern kingdom has seven. Right, what does that tell you? Right, meaning three over the same span of time, right? The southern kingdom has three, the northern kingdom has seven. Mm-hmm. And seven from three different families, whereas the three all are David and his grandchildren, meaning, you know, the it's not David that are in the three, but it's basically, it's Shlomo's son, the next one, and that's it. And this is seven kings over three different houses, right? So what does he want? He doesn't want that, right? He wants his house to be the house. I die. Everyone dies. I'm going to die. I had a dog lick my blood. Okay, I'll be dead. What difference does it make? But when he hears that there's going to be nobody left, that's where he changes. That's where he feels bad about the way things are. And that's where his emotions are very, very strong. And Hashem sees that. And Hashem basically changes a little bit. And now there's a question amongst the commentaries: is his teshuvah A, genuine, B, enough? Right.
Obviously, it was genuine enough because Hashem accepted it.
So obviously, I won't say obvious. They'll say nothing's obvious, meaning that there's ways to look at it both ways, right? Meaning, on some level, the genuine is an easy case to make, which is, look, Hashem then says, you see, he changed, so I'm going to do things differently. But how differently does he do them? Not so differently, right? And all he does is, it's not going to be in his lifetime. He's not going to see it.
The zebra,
right? He's not going to see it, so it's not much.
But what he did at that moment, what he felt in his heart at that moment.
So look at how he says. Look at how he says it on top of page 770. Look at what he says. He says, "Haraita, did you see?" Right. So what's he saying? It's seeing. It's all about the appearances. Right. Meaning you see, right, and all the things that he does are external things, right? So it's all about the what it looks like. So what does he say? He says, oh, because from the outside he made it look good, so he won't see it in his lifetime. But that doesn't mean it's not coming. It doesn't mean it's not deserved. It doesn't mean it's not happening. I think there's more to this. I think what's ironic and intentionally ironic is what moves him? His household. What didn't he recognize from Navot, right? That Navot also felt this way. Mm-hmm. Navot, no, he didn't have a kingdom, but he had his land. His land he got all the way back from Moshe Rabbeinu, meaning they in Israel, they hand the land down in perpetuity. Whoever your family is, your family has their land, and that's what he didn't want to give up. Nahalat Avotai. So he didn't recognize that, but he recognized it when it was his, right? And I don't know, maybe ultimately he recognized it, we don't know. So I think that's a part of the message here as well. So he kind of, from the outside, shows that he's doing teshuvah. So Hashem will say, okay, from the outside, well, you know, you won't see it in your time, but it's happening. Because you haven't really done teshuvah. If you would have really done teshuvah, perhaps Hashem says, "Okay, I'll change the decree. I won't do it that way." All right, but it doesn't seem like he completely changes it. Anyway, that's what we have now. What do we got here? All right, now we're gonna read. It's long, but let's see if we can get through the next chapter to see what actually happens to him. Now, Isabel, we're gonna have to get to. But it's not going to be tonight. Isabel, you know, Hashem doesn't say that he's going to protect Isabel, he's going to save Isabel, or anything of the sort. Okay. Vayeshivu shalosh shanim en melchama ben Aram uben Yisrael. For 3 years there was no war between Aram and Israel, meaning this kingdom of Achav. Vayhi bashana shlishit vayared Yehoshaphat melech Yehuda melech Yisrael. Then after the third year, the king of Yehuda, right, who remember I said was generally good, and Yehoshaphat was good. Yehoshaphat, king of Yehuda, comes to the king of Israel. Vayomer melech Yisrael el avadav, hayedatem kilanu ramot gilad, v'anachnu machshim ekachat otam yad melech Aram. He says, you know, there's this place, Ramot Gilad, it's the high places of Gilad. By the way, Gilad should be important to us. Why? Because where's Eliyahu Hanavi from? Gilad, right? He's Eliyahu, Tishbi Eliyahu Gilad, even Toshveh Gilad, right? So it's actually Eliyahu's place, or where he comes from. And he says, look, you know, we could take this Ramot Gilad. If you and I get together, we can go and take this place, Ramot Gilad, from Aram. It's kind of like, you know, if we want, we could take the Golan Heights or something like that, you know, if it wasn't in our possession. So Achav says to Yehoshaphat, will you come with me into battle? He says, I'm in, right? Like you, like me, like your people, my people, like your horses, my horses. Right? Meaning, I'm in 50-50 with you on this war, which is interesting, right? Because, first of all, we're seeing here two Jewish nations, right, that are not together, but they're nevertheless going to work together, right? And Yehoshaphat, I told you, is a good guy. But who's he working with? Achav, who's not a good guy. And he says it, how does he say it? He says, you know, mikasa tu kasa, right? He's like, I'm gonna, you know, he's got this, like, he reached out to Achav. He said, hey, we could go take this thing. Achav's a little suspicious, and he says, no, I'm with you all the way. Okay. Vayikpots melech Yisrael tenevi'im karba me'ot ish, vayomer alehem ha'elech al ramot gil'ad la'milchama imechtal. So he gets 400 prophets, which is not a surprising number, because we saw 400 prophets were the way that he gets false prophets from before. That's the number. He says, should I go to the war or not? And they said, go, and Hashem will put it in your hands. Right? Which is interesting, because they're using Hashem's name.
But Yehoshaphat is using Hashem's name.
No, this is Melech Yisrael. Right.
Wait, I don't understand something.
So, Melech Yehoshaphat. Sorry. I skipped that pasuk. Five. But Yom Yehoshaphat El Melech Yisrael Derosh Nav Kayom Et Tavar Al Nai. Says first, let's ask Hashem. So they go and they say, what should we do? And the Nevi'im say, Hashem says yes. But Yom Yehoshaphat. So Yehoshaphat says, Ha'en Po Navi L'Adonai Od V'Nidreshamo. So he says, is there another Navi to Hashem? And let's ask him. Right. In other words, you could see there's a suspicion that the prophets that they asked are not, these are not, can you get me a real prophet? Right? He had 400. No. Do you have one more for Hashem? Like, really for Hashem. Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, notice how it keeps calling him Melech Yisrael, even though we know who it is. It's Achav. There is one other guy. I don't like him very much. Now, who do you expect it to be? It's not. He says his name is Michayahu ben Yimla. He says, no, don't say that. Don't say he won't say it positively. He says, go get me this guy. Which is interesting, which you see. Eliyahu is not the guy, right? Why doesn't he say Eliyahu? Right.
Yehoshaphat will tell him.
Right.
He'll tell Yehoshaphat, don't go anywhere.
Right. Now, by the way, Yehoshaphat, so far, what are you seeing about him? Very optimistic, you know, very, you know, no, it'll be all right, you know, okay.
Wait, I have a question. So, yeah. Yehoshaphat comes to Ahav, but, and then it's Ahav's idea.
No, it's Yehoshaphat's idea to get a prophet, but Achav gets wrong prophets. It's Yehoshaphat's idea to get a good prophet.
No, before that, he seems to come for no reason, really.
Right, we have to.
It's Melech Yisrael who comes up with the idea to take Ramot.
No, it's Melech. It's Yehoshaphat. That,
King of Israel said to his courtiers, "You know that Ramot Gilad belongs to."
The oh yeah, no, you're right. Sorry.
So it just says he came to visit.
He came to visit him. And when he comes to visit him, he tells him, come, join me. And he says, okay. You're right. My bad. I said that it was, I explained it the wrong way. I said that it was Yehoshaphat's idea. It was not Yehoshaphat.
We don't really know what he came for. He just came.
We don't know why he came, but when he comes, this is the topic of conversation.
He's talking to a war.
Right. ומלך ישראל ויהושפט מלך יהודה יושבים איש על כיסאו מלובשים בגדים בגורן פתח שער שומרון וכל הנביאים מתנבאים לפניהם. So now here's the scene. The two kings each have a throne, right, sitting there, and all the people are there in front of them, and the prophets are coming and making prophecy. ויעש לו צדקיהו בן כנענה קרני ברזל ויאמר כל מעלה ואלה תנגח את ארם על כלותם. This guy צדקיהו בן כנענה makes a iron horns, and he says, we're going to use these to get rid of Aram. Everybody saying, yeah, it's going to be great. Right? All saying good. Says, listen, I'm telling you, the king wants to hear what you have to say about this, but I have to tell you, 400 guys already said it's good. Also, say it's good. Right? Don't say it's bad. But Yomer Michaya, Chai Adonai Kim Et Asher Yomar Adonai Elai Oto Adavei. He says, listen, I'm a Navi. What Hashem tells me, that's what I say. But Yavo El HaMelech, Vayomer HaMelech Elav, Michayahu HaNelech El Ramot Gilad HaMelchama Im Nechtal. says, so should I go or not go? The king asks Michayah. Vayomer lo aleh v'hatzlach v'natan al Rabbi Yadamech. He tells him, go, be successful, and Hashem will put you in the hands of, Hashem will put it in the hands of the king. So he said exactly what the other guy said. Mm-hmm. He says, listen, I'm telling you, I want you to tell me the truth. Meaning, he knew from the fact that the guy said word for word what the other guy said, that he wasn't telling the truth. So he says, I want to hear the truth. He says, all right. He says, I see all of Israel scattering to the mountains like sheep without a shepherd, which is not what the king wants to hear, right? And meaning your military is going to run as if you are not there, which means you're going to be dead. These are not Adonim, these are not masters. Everyone should go to their home in peace. Meaning, don't fight the war. It's no good. So Achav turns to Yoshafat and he says, "Halo amarti elecha lo yitnabe alai tov ki imra." I told you, he's only going to say bad things about me. There's no way he could say good things about me. Vayomer lachen shma devar Adonai. Ra'iti et Adonai yoshev al kiso v'chol tzva shemayim umed alav yimino mismol. He says, so listen, he continues talking to Navi. He says, listen to what Hashem has to say. I see Hashem sitting on his throne. And all the whoever else is in the Shamayim are sitting around him on right, left, I guess angels or whatever it may be. Vayomer Adonai, mi yifatet achav, vayal vayipol v'remot gilad. You know what Hashem said? Hashem said, who's going to seduce Achav, right? And he'll go up to Ramot Gilad and think he could take it. Vayomer zeh becho v'zeh omer becho. And each one said, oh, this way we could seduce him, this way we could seduce him. So the wind stood up before Hashem and said, I'll seduce him. How will you seduce him? I'll be the false word in the mouths of all his prophets. And he said, okay, go seduce him. Go, you could do it. So in other words, what's the prophet saying? What's Michayahu saying? He's saying, listen, all these guys are from Hashem to trick you to go to Ramot Gilad so you get killed. Right, that's what the Navi is telling him. He says, listen, I'm telling you, Hashem is sitting up there and he's laughing his sides off at you. He is tricking you. All these guys are saying what they're saying because they're here to seduce you. They're here to tell you, go do something that's terrible for you. But if you want to save yourself, don't go to war in Ramot Gilad.
The thing that doesn't make sense is why wasn't this Navi in the same category as the other Navi'im?
Because he's the real Navi. All the others are Navi'e Sheker.
I know, but he's saying the Ruach went and told them to say this.
No, but you're saying why?
If you read back, it says the Ruach said, I'm going to trick them. How am I going to tell them? I'm going to tell all the Navi'im, tell him to go to
the fake Navi'im. The fake Navi'im.
You can't tell the real Navi? Hashem can trick the real Navi if he wants to.
No, he's saying, I'm telling you what's really going on in Shammai.
Fake
Navim
don't know.
The fake Navim don't know. The fake Navim, they say what they say. Okay. So he's saying, I see behind the scenes. He says, I'm a fly on the wall in Hashem's office. Right? And you know what went on in Hashem's office? Let me tell you. It's like the joke about the two guys you're pitching tomorrow, there's this joke, whatever. It's two guys, they love to play baseball, they make a deal. Whoever dies first will come back and say if there's baseball in heaven or not. So, okay, one day one of them dies, and the guy comes to him in a dream. He says, I have good news and I have bad news. Good news, what's good news? There's baseball in heaven. Oh, great. What could be bad? Bad news, you're pitching tomorrow. so that's what's happening here. You know, he tells him the same thing. He says, this is, you're pitching tomorrow. He says, I know this is all a scam from Hashem to get you to go to war so you could die. Right, that's what he's telling him. So, Vayigash said, Kayahu ben Kana'ana. So this Tzidkiyahu who made those iron horns whacks the Navi. Right? It's not safe to be a Navi, by the way. Nevi'im get beaten up a lot. He says, oh, where'd the wind go on that one, right? He hits him and says, oh, did Hashem tell you that was coming? Or something like that. He says, you'll find out. One day you're going to be on, you're going to try and go in the inner room to hide, but you're not going to be able to hide. ויאמר מלך ישראל, קח את מיכאיו וישיבהו אל עמון, אל שר העיר, ואל יואש בן המלך, ואמרת, כאמר המלך, שימו את זה בית הכלא, ואכילו לחם נחץ ומים נחץ עד בואי בשלום. So he says, take this guy, the king says, take this prophet, and put him in jail, and feed him garbage food, until I come back in peace from war, and show him that he doesn't know what he's talking about. So, okay, obviously the king is a moron because he didn't listen to the real message. Vayomer Michayahu, im shov tashu b'shalom lo diber alonai bi, vayomer shimu amim kulam. He says, okay, if you come back in peace, then Hashem didn't talk to me. He says, I accept your challenge, right? Vayal melech yisrael v'shafat melech yehuda Ramot Gilad. So they go up to Ramot Gilad. Vayomer melech yisrael v'shafat chitchapes v'ubo b'milchama v'ata levosh b'gadecha v'itchapes melech yisrael v'yavo b'milchama. So he says, so the king says to Yehoshaphat, disguise yourself and go into battle, but wear your clothes. Well, you'll see. ומלך ארם ציווה את שרי הרכב אשר לו 32 לאמור, לא תלחמו את קטון ואת גדול, כי אם את מלך ישראל לבדו. Right, he says, what should you do? He says, the Aram's strategy is, don't fight a war. Just find the king, kill him. If you kill the king, you're going to win. Right, so that's what the other side is doing. So what happens? Yehoshaphat is disguised.
Ahab tried to set him up too, it sounds like.
So he's dressed like Ahav,
right,
or something like that.
Why did he fall for that?
So it's a good question. If we were doing the Book of Melachim, we'd talk about Yehoshaphat. But whatever. Basically, well, hold off. You'll see what happens. So now, what are they doing? They're trying to kill who? They're trying to kill Ahav. But when they try and kill Ahav, who are they really trying to kill? Yehoshaphat, because he's dressed like Ahav. So what happens? So they go and Yehoshaphat screams, right? Meaning that he's worried about what happened. But then they realize, oh, wait a second, that's not really the king, and they break away from him. And a guy, oh, just so happens, one of the Aram guys, just so happens to pull back the arrow, and he's just going to shoot an arrow. Vayakeh et melech Yisrael ben advakim uben asiryon. And what happens? He shoots an arrow. Oh, and by the way, where does the arrow go? And it strikes Ahav. Where? In between the plates of armor. Right? Not easy to do. Right? By accident. Not even trying. They weren't even trying to kill him. He tells this chariot driver, better take the truck home because I'm not in a good spot. And the battle was strong that day. And the king was standing in the chariot facing Aram. And he died in the evening. And the wound, because he was in the chariot, the blood is pouring out into the chariot. And they said to everybody, all right, everybody, go home. Right? This is not working. They weren't able to take Ramot Gilad. The king was killed. The king dies, and they bring him to Shomron. And they bury him in Shomron. They rinse off the chariot al brechat shomron, and because they're rinsing it off, what happens? The dogs come and they start licking the blood, exactly as Hashem said would happen.
But didn't Hashem just say 1 minute ago he's not going to do that?
No, he said, you're not going to... What's not going to happen? He didn't say he's not going to die a gruesome death. He said that what? That
he's not going to see his family.
He's not going to see his family lose the kingship. And he did it. His son, Ahaziah, takes over for him. Right? And so he doesn't see his family lose the kingship. He doesn't see whatever is going to happen. We'll get to that. And what does happen, though? But what does happen is the dogs lick up his blood. And he does die a gruesome death. And it's an early gruesome death. And I would even go as far to say as this also helps us explain why Hashem split the prophecy up into two. Right? First, he told him, the dogs are going to lick up your blood. Then later, he told him, and Izevel, and your children, and the household. So it happens in two different stages. And we're going to see the next stage, next week, the week after, with Ahaziah and whatever he does. But basically, there's a new king in town, and that's Ahaziah. And it's interesting, he left Eliyahu and Avi completely out of this. Right? This part, Eliyahu didn't get to do. Right? Eliyahu didn't get to tell him exactly, not to go to war, what was going to happen, and so on. One other thing that we'll point out here is Hashem shows Eliyahu HaNavi, Achav could do a little bit of teshuvah, which is a little bit of a jab at Eliyahu, because Eliyahu's feeling is teshuvah. There's no teshuvah. But Hashem sort of shows Eliyahu, even Achav is capable of somewhat of teshuvah. So who knows? I mean, he doesn't say these words. But who knows if Eliyahu or someone else would work on the people to do teshuvah?
Where does he do any teshuvah? Except for that one part.
That part.
Even Hashem says it's all on the outside, so it's not really worth anything.
But it's something. It's worth something because he doesn't see it in his own time, right? And he says Haraita. Do you see Eliyahu? Right? When you say to someone, "Do you see?" Right? What do you mean when you say, "Do you see?" Right, it's take a look at this. Right, Haraita is not a nice way of saying something. Do you see? It's a way of saying you see. Okay. Next time, by the way, this is pretty much the end of the book of the first half of the book of Kings, because the book of Kings is one book, but it's divided into two. Next time, we'll start with Ahaziah, who we'll see. He's got his own story, and Eliyahu and Achav deal with him. All right, let's stop here.
Yeah.